All right, episode four of the Sports Bible. We're back. We got a lot to cover this week. We have upcoming cross-country provincials on October 30th at Albion Hills in Humber or in Toronto. We have nationals in 2 weeks. If the Laurier does qualify, the girls qualify, they are looking strong. Probably gonna be third, probably making it as a team. Men's team, we got a couple of individual runners who have a chance to make it up to Calgary on the 12th. So right now we're just looking. This week's an easy week. Get ready, get ourselves prepared, get ourselves healthy, eat healthy, train, light training, nothing too hard. We don't gonna injure ourselves. Just taking care of ourselves, going to physio, all that stuff. And then provincials on the 30th.
Has there been any like points of emphasis that the coaches have given out to you guys or?
Mostly just eating healthy, resting, staying hydrated. This week, we usually go by kilometers. He gives us kilometers. This week, he just wants us to run for time. So today's run for 30 minutes, and that's it. But for some people dealing with injury, they're going to take biking or they're going to go to the pool. Just take it easy this week and don't go out too hard on yourself.
For sure.
We'll talk about tryouts that happened last week for the boys' soccer. I know me and myself and Michael tried out. Michael, how'd you feel you did?
I think it went pretty well. It was a big showing. There was a lot of people there. Maybe around 30 to 35, I feel like.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It was competitive. It was definitely competitive. I'm looking forward to it. I think there's some solid guys. How about you? What did you think of it?
I didn't expect, as you said, I didn't expect that much people to come out, especially having, as you said before, this is gonna be like a whole new year rebuild. But I'm happy. I'm happy we had a lot of people out. I know the coaches were happy that there was a lot of people out. Did not expect that to be that much running in it, cardio. But that's what cross country got me ready for, and I don't really mind the running. I know a lot of people hated it. A lot of people looked at his shape already, but that's what trout's for, you know. And everyone's gonna get better. Just 30 people, 35 people. It's gonna be crazy to think that half of those guys aren't gonna make the team, or half those guys aren't gonna make the tournament team. Because there's a lot of good players out there.
Yeah,
At
when you
least
put it like
20.
that.
At least 20. There's 20 good players out there.
Yeah, I feel like yeah, basically half will get like chopped, and then he'll take like a 15 max, I feel like so.
I also don't. I think a lot of people aren't going to come out to second tryout now they know what they got into. With a lot of running, I know on the fourth it's an hour. We only get an hour, said two, which is all right. I mean, it's going to be a lot of games, a lot of scrimmaging. But hopefully I'll be able to have the ability to go out harder, because I know Martin didn't want me going out too hard because if we had provincials coming up this week.
For sure,
But
for sure.
I did take a hefty fall, I'd say, in one game. But coach did go in the game and had to sacrifice my body to block that shot. But another cool. Martin wasn't too happy about that, but it is what it is. It is what it is. I have to go out there and compete. So,
For sure. Yeah.
it's crazy though.
It was good. It was definitely good. I like the energy. There wasn't, no one was really arguing or anything like that. We're just all there to try out to play. So it was good. Looking forward to the next one on November 4th. So we get like a week break and then we'll be back at it again. And then
8 p.m. YMCA.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was crazy. We'll
go from there.
Speaking of all crazy though, this week's EPL was crazy. talk about some outrageous scoring, upsets. Just overall, just that's what we get with the Prem. That's what we get for soccer in English in England. Just crazy, crazy scorelines, crazy games.
Yeah, we could start off with Chelsea winning 7-0. That was that was embarrassing. Yes.
That was what, Norwich?
Yeah, Norwich.
Oh my. Yeah, just stay in the championship, Norwich. I don't know why you came up here.
I saw some of the highlights and it was just too easy. I know Chelsea are a very strong team. You know, Norwich are last in the Prem. They're kind of like a free win right now, but the way Chelsea dominated the game was pretty embarrassing on Norwich's front. I think we can clearly see who's like the dominant teams in the league versus who like needs to stay at the championship.
100%. Yeah, there's definitely separation between the two.
Yeah.
From the top of the table to the bottom of the table.
Yeah, man. Even the Watford Everton game. You know, Watford just got a new manager, Claudio Ranieri. And I'm pretty sure, like, they won 5-2 against Everton, who is a respectable team. And I did not see that coming.
No. Everton is a team that can battle easily for top 10.
And to be embarrassed like that.
Yeah, but see, well, Watford has those guys, no? They have Saar. I mean, Saar, that guy is crazy on the mid. I know they lost Deeney.
Yeah.
Big one. They have a lot of young players who can make that team easily. Mm-hmm.
And then there was City, of course, being Brighton 4-1. I wanted to ask you what you think of Phil Foden, because he has a lot of praise. Just for his ability to play like all along the front three. He can kind of play the midfield role as well. Do you think he's like England's next big star?
That's a tough question, because there's a lot of young English talent out there.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you got the likes of Mason Mount, you got the likes of Saka, Foden.
Mm-hmm.
I think those three right there I just named are going to be your future stars of England. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Saka is going to be like, you know, you can kind of see him as the next Sterling.
Yeah.
On the wing. You could see Foden being the next, I don't even know, Rooney. Just controlling the midfield.
Mm.
And then Mason Mount is just the guy who's everywhere. You know, you can even say he's the next Steven Gerrard. In that midfield. So you have like the next, you know, Sterling. You got the Rooney. You got the Steven Gerrard. Out of those three, though, I mean, Foden's good. I can't lie. What he's doing in the Premier League now, and he's up. I think he's even up for the Ballon d'Or. I think he's on the shortlist.
Yeah, I believe so.
At such a young age, so is Mount, but I don't think Mount's going to make it as far as Foden. I think Foden's going to make it into the top 15, top 10, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to shine at such a big club like Man City, what he's doing with big stars like this, De Bruyne, there's Sterling, there's Gabriel Jesus, Ruben Diaz, Laporte, and just being the ability at his age to shine like that is crazy. So yeah, I'm gonna say I think not only him, but Saka and Mount are the next big stars in England. That's the next big three.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. I know England, the talent they have right now might be the best that they've ever had. Just like from academy level to the actual, you know, team. They've always had good players, you know, back in the day with Lampard, Gerrard, Rio Ferdinand. But
yep.
I had to ask now, just because the quality of players, it seems that a lot of them are much younger now. You know, we know how players hit their prime when they're 25, 26, 27, when they've had that experience. But
yep.
There's guys like Foden, who's 21. Guys like Saka, who's 20, Mount, who's 22. Like, these guys are important figures of their team, but they're so young. And I think it's, you have to credit the whole academy system of actually training these players properly and bringing them up and then implementing them into the Premier League to get that experience firsthand. And then also the international level as well. Actually giving these players opportunities and not just giving seniority. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Especially what they did in the, what was the Euros.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like a team that young just washed through the whole competition, except obviously in the finals when they lost. But just having that, like, you know, the look at that young team, and it was kind of like, it kind of reminded me of Ajax when they made that run in the championship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just such a young team, and they're, even if you're not like a star in a team, let's just say like Reece James, you know, he kind of gets looked, doesn't really get looked at when you look at Chelsea. Mm-hmm. You kind of think of Lukaku, Mount, Timo Werner, Conte, obviously, Jorginho. Yeah. But like when it comes to international, that's where players really, or like big stages, that's where they get noticed. You know, Ajax, obviously. De Jong got noticed, he went to Barca. De Gea got noticed, he went to Juventus. Van de Beek got noticed, he went to Man United.
Right.
So just having that young team and what they did, it really puts England on the map. Not even England, but England's stars on the map. And it was just so fascinating to watch the whole
Euros. Yeah.
I mean, congrats Italy. They had a good competition, but I felt England had it this year.
Yeah, England should have taken it. Realistically, they had all the momentum. I know Italy didn't lose in like such a long time. I think what was the run? 20 games maybe?
Yeah, they were undefeated.
Yeah. And so it was the right two teams in the final. I just feel like England had everything going for them. England had the players to, you know, frustrate Italy's defense, but it just didn't come together at the right time. And then the whole penalty shootout thing, you know, that's another discussion.
I blame Gareth Southgate on that one.
100%. 100%.
You cannot take off players and put them in like literally an 120 minute and expect them to take penalties.
Yeah.
Like you brought in Rashford, he missed. You can't expect him to, he was barely in the game.
Yeah, man. That's like his first shot. That's his first touch of the ball.
How are you supposed to put him in a big spot in penalty? Who else got on the pitch? Sancho.
Sancho. And Saka, too.
I mean, yeah, Saka was playing, though. Saka.
You're right.
I felt bad for the kid.
Yeah.
Like, after he missed that shot. And that's such a young, like, being 19 on that big stage.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in England, where there's a lot of, fans discriminating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt, my heart went out to him. It's like, I know he doesn't deserve it, but like the hate, like right when he missed it, you just knew the hate was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was crazy. It was just like, but that's obviously another topic with the England fans and how crazy they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's, going back to the Prem and the crazy stat line. I think the craziest game of all was Liverpool, Man United.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really live up to the hype. 5-0 smash from Liverpool. Salah with 2 goals. Best player in the world right now, you could say.
Yeah. He had a hat trick, bro. He had a hat trick.
Yes, he did. He did. Forgot. Yes, he didn't have 2, he had 3.
I think it was one of the easiest hat tricks as well.
Oh, 100%. It was a lot of a lot of just tapping goals and but he's just there at the right spot.
Of course, yeah. Still credit to him. Credit to how we played. Man United, they made it easier, but still credit to Liverpool for playing, you know, to the level that we know they can play at. I just think Man United have no identity. They have no structure to their play. They're kind of all over the place. They don't really know what they want from their players. It's a big mess. And even though they have, you know, all the household names and Bruno Fernandes, Pogba, Ronaldo, Rashford, it's just names at this point. You know what I mean? they, for the most part, they don't really play. They should be playing a lot better than they do. And I think everybody's going to point to the manager, rightfully so. But what did you think of the game and the state of Man United?
I'm going to have to agree with your statement of, like, they just have, it's just big names in a terrible system. You can have star players, you can have big names, but if you have no system, no chemistry, no structure, it doesn't matter if you have Messi, Ronaldo, Lewandowski on the team. You got to have a structure, and it comes down to the coach. Obviously, Ollie's on the hot seat. There's potential candidates coming out. I've been saying Conte. It's gonna take over as Man United, which I'm kind of hoping he does. I like what he did in Chelsea.
I do, but I kind of hope he goes to Arsenal.
Hey, well, right now, Arteta's playing well. You know, he's won, I think, what was it, 4 straight games?
I think 6 out of the last 8, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
You know, we obviously, it was a tough draw against Crystal Palace on Monday. Should have never lost a game or even took a point, but thankfully Lacazette came in clutch.
Yeah.
And then we really turned the gears on Friday against Aston Villa 3-1.
Yeah.
Which is good. And I don't know. Like, if you had to pick one striker, because right now Lacazette, when he's in the lineup, we used to click. He was in the lineup against Aston Villa. We clicked. He came on as a super sub against Crystal Palace. Saved us there. So you think it's Aubameyang out or Lacazette?
So I feel like Aubameyang plays better with Lacazette in the lineup because he's guaranteed more service. Because Lacazette drops into that 10 role, right? We know that he's trying to link up with Uba. So I think it's better for him. I originally thought that, because when Aubameyang's not getting the ball and he's playing striker, he's useless. Because he's not doing anything.
No.
Because he doesn't really drop deep. That's not really his game. So Lacazette, when he's in the lineup, he does more of that. He drops deep. You know, he has the link-up play. But we can't play in behind of Lacazette because he has no pace. he's slow. He's, you know, he's much older now. So that's why on the counterattack, we're not really a threat. So playing them together, you kind of get the best of both worlds. So that's where it works. So I think Uba has to start just because he's more of a killer than Lacazette when it comes to, you know, finishing goals and stuff like that. But I think our style of play kind of suits Lacazette best. How about you?
Yeah, because Arsenal has been in that style of play possession.
Mm-hmm.
When Wenger came in, that was all it was about, just a possession offense. You saw great goals to Arsenal with the, like, tic-tac-toes, just passing the ball, moving. That's Arsenal's way of playing. That's why I enjoy watching Arsenal, because this the way they can, if they really click, the way they can get it from their own box to the other box in like a minute, not even a minute, less than a minute, and put them back in net is like really amazes me.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a couple, even last year, a couple times where they just play around in their end, but they're patient with the ball, and he's moving up the field. But I feel like I think Aubameyang is going to leave eventually from Arsenal, but after Lacazette is gone, like I said, obviously Arteta doesn't really start him much because Aubameyang's in there, and you got Saka, you got Smith Rowe, Odegaard. He has nowhere to really fit, except you put him on like maybe the left or the right, but Pepe plays there and so does Saka.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's Lacazette out first, get some cash, and then sell Aubameyang. And then for the time of us trying to find a new striker, I think Gabriel Martinelli, Martinelli. He's gonna sub in for Aubameyang for a bit until we get that prolific striker, hopefully in Arsenal.
Because I do know Lacazette's contract is coming up this year, so this is his final year. So
yeah, it's done.
I think we should let him go. There's no reason to really keep him. There's no reason to give him the high wages. Our team's already so young. So I think we should sign a striker and then let Uba run out his contract. And then that way we're not, you know, completely screwed when Uba leaves as well. Have some competition for Martinelli and for Balogun with another striker, and then we build off of that. I still think we have a big problem with our wingers. Pepe, what do you think of Pepe? Because I have a long
rant. He needs to go. Simple.
What? Oh, he needs to go?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he needs to go.
We paid him how much? What was it, 72, 77?
Yeah, 74. Yeah.
For all the hype for nothing. he's provided with zero. I mean, he has a killer left foot.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't use it often. Like he tries to cut in a lot. He tries to, you know, dance around players in the wing. He can't. It's just frustrating to watch him play.
Mm-hmm.
As an Arsenal fan, he gives the ball too much. Hasn't lived up to the money we paid for him. I think Saka came in and already took his position.
Yep.
You can even stick Smith Rowe over there if you want to. And have Ødegaard in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Because Smith Rowe can just play anywhere. He's around the midfield. You can play, stick him in. Obviously, he's an attacking mid, but you can stick him on the wings if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sell Pepe and take the money.
Yeah, he's just not. He's not consistent. That's my biggest problem with him. I know. Last year, you know, he picked up form near the end of the season. He was one of more of our like consistent performers at the end of the season. But through his entire like run, he hasn't been consistent at all. Because one game he'll play great, you know, to assist, and then the next game he's useless. The next game he's useless. The next game he's useless. And then I'll have a game where he scores a goal. You know what I mean? Like, and we don't have time for that inconsistency. We need to know as a senior player, we can rely on you to deliver performances. And he limits us in the sense that because Saka's are really out and out winger, I feel like he has to play Smith Rowe and Odegaard together. Or he has to play Lacazette and Aubameyang together. You know what I mean? He doesn't really make it hard for Arteta to pick a team because he's so useless.
Yeah, it's this whole team, I think, just needs obviously start from the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Arteta was good. You know, he had the prior history of Arsenal, playing for Arsenal, knowing what Arsenal is. But I just feel like a lot of players who turn coaches in the Prem don't really turn out very well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, now you have, like, you know, Crystal Palace has Patrick Vieira. We have Arteta. Man United has Ollie. But all the three managers I just named struggle. We're in over 10th. You know, Man United ain't looking too hot. Crystal Palace is near the bottom of the table. So just I think we need to start let go of Arteta. As you said, hopefully bring Conte.
Yeah.
Or just any somewhere else. I don't know. I personally felt like we should have kept Unai Emery.
Hmm.
But let him go. Yeah.
It's tough to say. Because I do feel like Emery needed more time. He had a lot to deal with at one time with the whole Ozil situation. The way the club was progressing wasn't as fast as they wanted to. But I think our style of play was, I think with Emery, we attacked much better than we do now, but we could not defend. We could not defend at all.
No.
I think Arteta fixed the defensive problem, but our attack is so, it's so limited. It's so rigid. We don't really move the ball, you know, as well as we should. And then also the signings that they've made, you know, Emery was the one who signed Pepe. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Emery brought on Aubameyang too.
I think Aubameyang came. I think Aubameyang was Wenger's last signing. I think it was Wenger's last signing. But, you know, Emery did promote, you know, Smith Rowe. He promoted Saka into the team. So he did do a lot of good. But I agree. I think he needed more time. I just think at that time we weren't progressing as fast as we wanted to. And he was the unfortunate scapegoat that had to go.
Yeah. Two seasons. Mm-hmm. I think it was two seasons, but just wasn't enough for him.
Yeah.
He definitely needed more. I think that pretty sure that covers most of the EPL for that week. We're going to jump over to another week, but NBA's opening week. One word to describe that was just wow. Some of the games we saw, some of the performances we saw. Crazy. Crazy opening week. Hopefully this week we get the same energy, same games. But right now, Curry is looking like 2016 Curry, even better. I think this is coming out like we've never seen him before. I think he's having the best season, best start of his seasons he's ever had in his career. Especially that 45-point game against Clippers.
Yep.
And a triple-double opening night. Crazy. What are your thoughts about opening week NBA?
There was a lot of good basketball. Starting with Curry, Golden State, they're looking really good. The team's a lot deeper than I originally thought. They got a lot of guys off the bench who actually do contribute. It gives them a lot of options. But Curry had a very, I'd say, MVP type of opening week. There was also the Bulls. Chicago looked really good.
Yes.
Really good. Levine looks, you know, Levine was already one of my favorite players, but I'm just glad he has the help now to actually highlight how good of a player he is. We saw Alonzo get a triple-double against his former team, the Pelicans. The Pelicans look in disarray. They look pretty shambolic, I'm not going to lie. They do not look ready to play.
No.
They are missing Zion, but
doesn't matter.
I don't think it matters. I don't think they're not going to do much this season.
No. To be honest, Zion looking like a bust.
Nah, he Zion's
off just the court, off the court bust. News coming in, he's close to north of 300 pounds.
Yeah, that he gained more weight, which is crazy. I think he's just a curious case because we've never seen a body type like that could move like that.
And what about Prime Shaq?
Yeah, but the only thing is, like, the only difference I say is, like, Shaq was much taller, right? Like, Shaq was, you know, 7 feet and all that. But I feel like Zion's more compact than Shaq.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so because he's basically Shaq size, but he's like, what, like 4 inches shorter? So it's a, and he still moves like that, which is insane. But hopefully we'll see Zion back on the court soon. There was also I know you probably watched the Ja Morant versus the Lakers yesterday.
I was watching some of it, yeah, until my stream was glitching out, so I had to turn it off. But I was watching some of it.
Mm-hmm. He dropped 40 and 10, I believe.
Yeah.
In a loss, which was tough. You know, Carmelo had a big game.
Yep.
Dropped 26 points off the bench. But
just surpassed Malone. Ninth full time now scoring.
But there's a problem in LA. There is a problem. There's definitely Russell Westbrook is a big topic of discussion I want to get into.
It's just a slow start for him.
I know.
He starts before, mm-hmm. and he's near the end. Westbrook would be Westbrook near the end. Right now, there's no need to worry about him. We got the win finally. But Russell needs to get in the role of being the facilitator, not the scorer.
Yeah.
He's slowly getting better at it. He dropped, you know, almost such a triple double. He dropped 13 points, 13 assists. If you could just be that facilitator, finding LeBron, finding AD, and then I think our team, the Lakers will smooth out. You know, you ain't a scorer, leave the scoring to LeBron, leave scoring to Melo, leave scoring to AD. You just hustle on, be the hustler you are. Be the hustle on defense, hustle on the boards, and just facilitate on offense. That's all you got to do. You don't have to shoot. We don't need you to score. We got scorers.
I think, yeah, his best role is to facilitate. Still be aggressive, because I think he causes so much attention when he's attacking the paint and then dishing out. But the turnovers, it's like the decision making is poor. And that's always been a part of his game. Even when shooting the basketball, like, I don't know why he shoots so many threes. He doesn't need to. You know, those threes can easily be other threes for his teammates that can actually shoot the ball. You know, the chemistry between LeBron and AD is much better. But because Westbrook is such a dynamic point guard, he's such a ball-dominant point guard, it's going to take some time for LA. I just think the problems are very you could see them straight away. And it's something that's going to take some time.
Yeah. I don't think Vogel knows what he's doing with that offense.
Yeah.
Or defense. He's, you know, everyone looks at him as a top coach because he's in LA. And he's, you know, he won a championship with the Lakers. But, like, you could throw any coach with that team that they had, and they're going to win. Not because of the coach, because of the players they have. They have LeBron, AD. You're going to win with LeBron, AD. Simple. Actually, you're going to win with LeBron by himself. It's pretty simple. Any coach can get thrown in there. So I just feel like getting a coach who knows how to run a system, knows how to run star players, would help the Lakers. I know Popovich is looking – he's in the hot seat in San Antonio with the Spurs and stuff. So, I don't know. If the Lakers need to coach, I feel like you go off to Popovich, because he obviously coaches Team USA. He knows how to run stars. He's been around Durant, LeBron, Kobe, Dame, Kyrie. He knows how to work with these players. So, bringing a real coach into the Lakers would definitely help this team out. Obviously, age is a factor, the oldest team in the NBA. But that means they'll still have the most experience, which means they know what they're doing on the court and off the court.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, I think the biggest thing for them is just give them time to really work together. Chemistry-wise, you know, LeBron and AD already know how to work together. They've been playing for 3 years now, 3 seasons. Russell needs to know the system. Melo is now – it's crazy to say that Melo's a certified bench player, not like a role player. He's not really a star anymore on the team. But he knows what to do. He can fit in any system. So biggest thing for LA is just give him time. They'll figure it out. LeBron will figure it out. It's LeBron. And then by the end of the season, they'll be lifting up that championship. So it's okay. It's okay. Number 18 is coming to LA.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Because the Nets aren't looking well either.
They are not. It's looking a lot of KD save us this season. You know, James Harden is not getting the foul calls that he's usually accustomed to getting.
New rule.
Yeah, they're taking him much seriously. And then the style of play, it doesn't seem as fluid. I know they do have a lot of new guys also, so they're working around that, but the offense doesn't seem as fluid as it should be with the type of players they have. I don't know if the whole Kyrie thing is a factor of that, but they're gonna need some time as well to gel and figure it out. There was also Miami, who annihilated the Bucks by, I believe it was 47, which was pretty insane.
Yeah, you know, right when you brought in Miami, I had a ponder with that one because of my past comments about them leading up to the season. So I'm going to go out here and publicly say that I'd like to apologize to Tyler Hero. saying that he's not going to be one of the in that conversation, and that he's a bust. Right now, he's proving me wrong. Same with Miami Heat, to prove me wrong. I didn't think the chemistry would have clicked right away. Obviously, it is. So, any Miami fans out there to the state of Miami, my apologies. Down to you, Tyler Hero. My apologies for calling you a bust. This season you proved me wrong so far. Deep down though, you're still a bust. but hopefully you can go out there and prove me wrong, and then I may have to switch my answer. But right now I'm gonna stick with it's a good start for him, but stars and great players are consistent, so let's see. First year, he was consistent in the bubble. And second season, he wasn't consistent at all throughout the season. Right now, he's playing like Hero, bubble Hero. So let's see. But right now, he's proving me wrong right now. But we'll see if he can keep it up throughout the season. But Miami itself, they're looking good.
Yeah, I agree. For Hero, it's just about consistency. I do think he has it in him. I do think he's a very good he's a solid option off the bench the way they have him right now. Miami, they're an interesting team because I still feel like in the playoffs they're going to be annoying to face. I don't think they're going to go, you know, to the finals or anything like that, but they're going to be a challenge to beat in a 7-game series. But we'll see how things go. There's also the Charlotte Hornets, who started off 3-0.
First time in franchise history.
Yeah, with LaMelo Ball, with Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, you know, Hayward. And it's funny because Hayward hasn't really popped off at all yet. It's been a lot of LaMelo and Miles Bridges. But
it's been all Miles.
Yeah, man, they got a lot of good things going on there.
They do, and they have a good coach under them, which I do like. The fan base is there, and the fans are really getting behind them. And it's just a team that's full of average, solid players.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have really weak spots with the Hornets right now. Obviously, you got the stars and Melo and Miles Bridges coming up, but they have a lot of solid players around them. Terry Rozier, Hayward, Washington, Miles Plumlee now is in there. You know, you have a lot of solid players, which is why they're winning. Because they really have no weakness. The bench, they've good bench, the good depth, they have good starting lineup. So am I surprised with 3-0? A bit, kind of. It's Charlotte. You don't really think Charlotte is a good team.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm not surprised because Miles Bridges is getting back into – he's continuing from what he from where he left off, and so is Melo. So 50-50 with that team.
Yeah, a solid good young core. I think they're a play-in team. I think they can get the eighth spot. They could definitely challenge for that. I think their only thing is that this isn't really like their fault, but their team's just a bit too young. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't have too many veterans. You know, I think Hayward's probably their vet, which says a lot, right? So, but again, they're a team that has nothing to lose. They can afford to play their heart out every night because no one really thinks of them as, you know, a contender, a challenger, or anything like that. So that's what they have going for them right now. And they have a good foundation, so they'll just continue to build off that with their young guys.
Mostly liking James Bouknight. That guy can ball, and you showed what he can do in the preseason for Charlotte. And he's a good backup, a good solid bench player coming off. Eventually, I feel like he's going to sneak into that starting lineup as a shooting guard.
Mm-hmm.
But that guy could ball. It was a great pickup from Charlotte in the pick. I want to say 14th or somewhere between 10 to 14. He was picked up. But yeah, that guy can ball. That guy is an underrated. I feel like he's an underrated rookie this year.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of rookies, Jalen Green is going off.
Yeah.
I was surprised about Green.
I think he dropped 30 yesterday.
He did. Ineos made the 8 threes by a rookie. He's the most ever.
Mm. Houston. Yeah, like we know Houston will make the playoffs, but their future is it's going to be great with Green, Kevin Porter Jr., Christian Wood. So. Yep. They definitely have good players. It's just, you know, the West is fully loaded. So,
yeah, the West is tough. But give them years. I feel like next mm-hmm. 2 to 3 years, they'll be a top 16.
Yeah, they'll probably some teams will start to fall off.
Yeah,
and they can climb up. Another rookie who balled out was Scotty Barnes for the Raptors.
I can't lie there. I think your last game you dropped about 25, 24.
Yeah. Against the Celtics. He Scotty's solid. I knew he'd be solid. He does it all defensively. He's willing to work. He keeps to his strengths offensively, you know, good at running the floor, strong around the rim. Keeps it simple. And I think as a rookie, you know, that's kind of the best thing you could do at times, you know, stick to your strengths, work on your weaknesses, obviously, but while you're trying to get minutes and stuff like that, you know, sticking to your strengths and being dominant in that is ideal.
Yeah. Raptors look good though. Obviously I think they're 1-2, 1-3.
Yeah, 1-2.
But beating a team like Boston, getting that under your belt and having that chip over them mm-hmm. is definitely what they need because Boston is kind of like their kryptonite in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's always ends up Toronto-Boston in the playoffs. Boston usually gets the better hand of the two, but I feel like that's going to be – by the end of it, I'd say in the next 2 to 3 years, I think it's going to be a good rivalry. I think it's going to be Barnes versus Tatum a lot. Hopefully, that's what I'm looking for. But yeah, can't lie. Scottie Barnes is coming on strong. I'm still looking for So waiting for Cade Cunningham to debut for Detroit.
Yes.
Excited to see that. Excited to see what he can do. Is Detroit even looking too hot without him?
No, looking very average.
Yeah, just looking like Detroit. That's pretty much it. Just one word, Detroit will always be Detroit. And I just, like, Grant, if Grant can have another all-star season, you had Cunningham in there, and you have, you know, Sadiq Bey starting to come up big, Isaiah Stewart starting to come up big. And then you're adding Cade in there, who's, I'd say he's your typical point guard. He can do it defensively. He can attack the rim. He can shoot, pass. So I'm excited to see. I think he's coming back this week somewhere. I know that he was out with an injury. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm excited to see him play. Green, for sure. Green said he should have been number one. He's playing like he should be number one. But we'll see what Cunningham has to do.
Yeah, I know. We'll definitely lift up Detroit. I don't expect Detroit to make a playoff push, but they're definitely a lot better than they were last year. So they'll be, again, they'll be one of those teams that are annoying to face, like Charlotte, like Chicago. They'll put up a fight. I think the East is a lot deeper this year. Even Indiana, once they get their players back, like Caris LeVert, you know, TJ Warren, they'll be more of a problem to deal with as well. I think the worst of the bunch is Orlando. Orlando still, they have some good prospects. There's Cole Anthony, there's Jalen Suggs. You know, they have Wendell Carter Jr. They have the legend Mo Bamba. So
yeah,
we'll see what Orlando do. But I can officially say with my chest that Orlando will not make the playoffs. So
no, I don't. They look good yesterday against the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony dropped 20. I want to say 28, 8, and 14. Great game by him. Ross came on. Terrence Ross came on strong like he usually does.
Yeah, 22 points.
Yeah, dropped 20 in the fourth. But yeah, I don't know. Orlando, I feel like they can be a play-in team.
Mm-hmm.
And that from 8 to 10, I think they're not going to be, 7 to 10. I don't think they're going to be 7 or 8. I feel like they're going to be closer to the 10th position. But definitely, I think not, if they're not making it this year, they make it next year, for sure.
Really?
I feel like once they get – let's just see who they pick up this year in the draft. Or they might even sign someone in the G League. I know there's Zaire Wade just got drafted to the G League. LiAngelo Ball went to the G League. Mm-hmm. So they pick up another nice young star, and let's see what they do in the free agency. But this is the year for Orlando. This is the year they want free agents. This is the year to prove that Orlando's the place where you can come, you can win. They need at least one person to step up to be that star, and that's Cole Anthony. So,
yeah.
Players start liking what he's doing, then they're also going to want to play with him. So, this is the year for lower teams like Orlando, like Sacramento, like New Orleans to make a statement and say, hey, like, you know, this is where big stars can play. This is where we have stars. So, if not this year, then next year, for sure, Orlando is making playoffs.
Mm.
I think we're close to the end here, so we're going to end it off with the ending question.
Mm-hmm.
Like we usually do every week. This week we have, would you rather win multiple chips but be a role player / bench player, or not win a chip but be the star player? What do you got?
I think it depends on what you want to give to the game. there's a lot of people who, you know, don't win championships, but they're still remembered. And then there's a lot of people who don't win championships, and no one cares about, no, there's a lot of people who win championships, but no one cares about them at all, right? So I think legacy-wise, you'd want to be remembered as a winner. And you have to remember that not everybody's going to win at the end of the day. And if I know my role, and my role is to come off the bench or just to be a role player in the starting lineup and not necessarily be the best, but I end up winning at the end of the day, I'd rather take that because I'm trying to be a winner. I think obviously being the star player, you know, being the best, you get all the praise, you get all the glory, but you also get all the, you get a lot of hate as well. You get a lot of negative comments because you're the best, you're the star, but your team's not winning. And people are going to look at you like that as well. So even though you'll be maybe, let's say you'll go down as, you know, the greatest player to not win, that's not an attractive title for me. I don't want to be the best player that never won. I'd rather be someone who won. Okay, I wasn't the best in my position, but I contributed enough to be remembered. And that gave me the opportunity to win multiple championships. So I'd rather take that. How about you?
I'm going star player, no chip. As you said, you know, you're going to be remembered because you're the star player. You know, you can have the legacy built. For me personally, the way I play sports, you know, I want to be known. You know, even if I don't win, you know, losing is part of the game, but so is winning, as you said. But I don't know, just having that legacy being built and just being that star player on the team. I don't know, just having that glory, I feel like that just enlightens me more. You know, kind of be like that Chris Paul, kind of be the Dame, you know, Lillard, Reggie Miller, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like those guys just impacted the game more. Obviously, Reggie with the 3-point, Chris Paul is with the basketball IQ and the typical point guard. And then you have Dame, who's just Dame, you know. Either way, I just feel like the best chance for me, because at the, you know, when people play sports, you know, they want to be the greatest of all time. They want to be the best. That's what their main goal is. You know, reach the Hall of Fame is what you want to be. So I feel like, yeah, me winning, you know, being a role player and winning championships and having that on my, you know, resume and my accolades means pretty much nothing, though. You know, what if, you know, I could be a bench player and role player and have 5 championships, but have 0 all-star selections, 0 all-NBA teams, you know, kind of like Steve Kerr.
Right.
You don't see him in the Hall of Fame because he was overshadowed by Scotty, Rodman, Jordan. Me being a star player, it gives me the best opportunity to reach Hall of Fame, making multiple all-NBA teams, making multiple all-star selections. But yeah, not, you know, not having the biggest one is not having the chip on the resume, but me being able to, you know, climb up the leaderboards if I wanted to in all-time scoring or most all-star selections, just having that, I just think you get more. You can build a better resume if you're a star player without chips, because you get more opportunities.
For sure.
Obviously, winning Rookie of the Year, you have a chance. Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved. But yeah, I just feel like the best opportunity to get to Hall of Fame is being that star player. Chips do, you know, they do mean a lot, but if you're not making any all-stars, you're not making any all-NBAs or something, but you have chips, you ain't gonna get it. You need other accomplishments and accolades to build your resume. And I feel like the star player has a lot more options. So I'm going with the star, but no chips. I'll also the name in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I like your answer. I like the way you explained that. I think it's fair, yeah. I think it's fair that it's both sides. And I'm happy we didn't agree with each other on this one, too. So,
yeah, I feel like every ending question we have is we each pick something else. You know, last week was Messi. You were Messi, I was Ronaldo. And so, you know, having this question is we usually pick the opposite, which is good. Gets different sides of the story, which is good. I think that concludes this week, week four, episode four of the Sports Bible. We will catch you guys next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
Live at 2 p.m. and at Radio Laurier's Instagram and link in their bio. Also, links in my Instagram at Jack Rice. There's a link to Anchor, which has all our episodes on there. Is a link in Michael's
which Instagram is account. Michael_Oka with two A's.
He's also got a link there to set you, brings you to Anchor, which has all of our previous episodes. So if you miss an episode, feel free to hit the link. Everything's saved in there. It's also on Spotify. The Sports Bible. Look us up there. Promote us. Get the word out. This is the next big sports podcast at Laurier Brantford. So remember that. Sir. Taking over. Well, so, you know, this has been the host. I'm Jackson.
I'm Michael.
And we'll catch you next week. And on Tuesday for the Sports Bible, episode 5.
Yes, sir. Take care.